Welcome to Innovate 608, the podcast that shines a light on Wisconsin's entrepreneurial ecosystem. I'm Scott Mosley, Executive Director of Starting Block, Madison's startup hub. In this episode, my co-host Mark Richardson talks with David Hubanks, the co-founder and chief operating officer of Marley Medical. Innovate 608 is made possible by the generous support of the American Family Institute for Corporate and Social Impact and our media partner, the Wisconsin State Journal. Now, here's Mark.
Marley Medical offers a modern approach to healthcare. Founded in 2021 by digital health veterans and Propeller Health alum Chris Hogue, David Hubanks, and Joe Slavinsky, Marley Medical features doctors who listen, accessible experts, care from home, and a whole life approach. Those are all things that some would argue are in short supply in our healthcare system. Today, we're going to find out from co-founder David Hubanks how the Marley Medical team set out to redefine their corner of the healthcare world. David Hubanks, welcome to Innovate 608 podcast.
Thank you.
So you are COO and one of the co-founders of Marley Medical. What area of healthcare does Marley specialize in?
We specialize in really treating chronic disease and specifically cardiometabolic disease. So that would be people that have high blood pressure, diabetes, high cholesterol, obesity, any of these diseases that sort of center around the heart.
Okay. All right. And so who are your patients? How do they come to you? Would you be a primary? It doesn't sound like your primary care facility.
It's a great question. I would say kind of big picture where we see ourselves fitting is in an area that we have really been thinking about as a missing middle in healthcare. Okay. So you have primary care, which is really great in many ways for diagnosing folks and figuring out what's going on and things like that. Obviously, people depend on primary care for their primary care. Mm-hmm. The main issue is that once you've been diagnosed with a chronic disease, specialty care may not be for you right away. You may not be that advanced. You have high blood pressure. You don't need to necessarily go see a cardiologist just because you have high blood pressure. Yet primary care struggles to stay engaged with folks with chronic disease simply because of bandwidth and also just because of the way the clinics have traditionally been operated. People, have issues or maybe have a preventative visit.
Right.
And so this whole scheduling aspect, it's very discreet and very kind of time-based, right? Versus, if someone is starting to do worse, there's not really an automatic trigger to catch those folks.
Got it.
Co-founders, we all came from a company called Propeller Health.
Sure.
Propeller was another Madison startup company here. And we did a lot of work with asthma there and chronic disease and developed all these great tools and did a bunch of great research and showed if you can kind of keep tabs on folks between visits, you have a much better sense of how they're doing.
Right.
And then you can also say, hey, these folks are actually getting worse. And we had a great study with Dignity Health out in California, where we were able to actually show that we could prevent hospitalization from happening, by seeing this early or seeing that decline early. So it's a really great tool. What we really found is that the, primary care just couldn't absorb that new tool and say, okay, in addition to everything else that you're doing, now keep track of all of your patients all the time, is a really tough thing to switch to.
Yeah. And they're not built for that.
They're not built for that, right? And so we thought maybe if we were able to start a clinic from scratch, so we don't have a bunch of existing rules, we aren't sort of starting from a fee-for-service clinic, sort of in a traditional model and trying to transition to this new model where we're looking maybe to get into value-based care, more outcomes-based kind of care.
Sure.
Maybe we could create a clinic that's really based around this idea of remote patient monitoring, keeping better tabs on folks between visits, and really helping to catch these folks that are kind of in this missing middle, as we see it, between primary care and specialty care, where they know they have one of these diseases. We think we can build better tooling to keep tabs on them, keep in better contact with them, and help them stay at goal.
That's I like the missing middle. I like that terminology. It's did you feel like you had to start from scratch to really address the issue, that you really couldn't go in and modify any current component of the healthcare system?
Yeah, I mean, I think just realistically, any existing system. And that was the tough part about, you know, being a vendor into a clinic is like, hey, we have this great tool. And of course, they hear that every day,
yeah.
You know, and
get in line.
And, yeah, kind of get in line. And who's going to, you know, what kind of extra resources? Like, we would rarely even get a project manager assigned sometimes for these tools. And so as a result, they were just really tough and slow going and to get them to, you know, to be used as kind of a mainstream standard of care. And so that it felt like, you know, with COVID, you know, and the public health emergency, it really opened up virtual care in a new way. Obviously, a lot of people, most people now have had a virtual care visit.
Sure.
The laws have changed. It used to be you still had to see someone physically in person to establish a patient relationship. You no longer need to do that.
Okay.
You can establish a relationship virtually. And so it was sort of the timing felt right where we know these tools are really effective. There's plenty of studies that show that this works.
Yeah.
It's just not really been implemented yet in any big form. And then combine that with public health emergency, allowing for folks to be able to join a clinic like this virtually from the get-go. You know, we don't think this kind of missing middle, this approach is going to be for all people with chronic disease. Some people are really well served by their local PCP and are going to, you know, have great care there. And that's great. But about half of Americans who have chronic disease, roughly, right, are actually not at goal. And so there's sort of this opportunity that can we address that portion of the population in a different way and treat them and see if this helps to get them more to goal.
Yeah.
For whatever reason, they're not able to make it to their primary care physician, they don't have the care they need.
Right.
And so with virtual care, could we pick up these folks from, let's say, around the Midwest and have them join our clinic, versus having, it can only be established in Madison, Wisconsin. And so folks here can benefit from it, but like in Oshkosh, sorry, you're out of luck.
Right, which is kind of the opposite of virtual, right? That you would be geographically bound.
Right.
Right?
Yeah.
Like, I definitely have a question about that. So when you guys sat back, you know, the three of you, and I'm sure you've had some advisory folks that are like weighing in on the craziness that you were considering. So what was the problem? Like if you had to get it down to one problem, what was the problem that you wanted to solve?
Yeah, I think it gets back to that, what I was saying a little bit earlier, that in a big way, we've got a lot of research that shows how we can take patients who are diagnosed with high blood pressure and get them back to goal or, you know, with diabetes, helping them get their diabetes under control. You know, there's lots of studies around obesity and what can be done there, but the implementation of this has just been tough. Hmm. Right. Mm-hmm. And so we know the meds work also, right? We know that lifestyle stuff works also, but it's sort of to put that all together and to make it work, that the execution of it is really where we're focused. And in that regard, we think we have a better way because of the way that we're able to engage with folks by everybody, for instance, that has high blood pressure, gets a cellular connected blood pressure cuff.
Okay.
Right. So we had all this experience with dealing with remote patient monitoring. The easier you can make it. So if someone just takes their blood pressure, you know, which is it's a chore, right?
It's required.
But hopefully it's like brushing your teeth or whatever else, and eventually it becomes habit, right? As long as they do it, we get it in the chart.
Okay.
So we, you know, as soon as you start adding apps or if someone has to like manually record something, you know, the fall off happens really fast. So we think that, you know, the problem is there that there's all these folks that are not well controlled and have these diseases, right? And aren't really able to live the life that they'd like to be living, right? As a result, we think we can help there by providing these better tools, a clinic that's better designed to use these tools to then really be worried about the patients that need to be worried about. And for patients who are doing great, like encouraging messages and you know, keep it up and all that kind of stuff is definitely part of it. But, you know, you'd hate to have to spend equal time on all patients when half the patients might be doing great this month, right? And you've now spent a bunch of time there, which has taken away from looking at folks that actually need a little bit more care.
So it's like, you know, efficiency and sort of managing capacity, helping to manage capacity of care.
Right, through data, like data-driven clinical decision-making, And so being able to have that data at your fingertips to know this 10% of patients, these are the ones that are actually worth taking, you know, trying to engage with this month, trying to figure out what's not working. Is the med not being effective? Are they not taking it because they don't like it? Right. Whatever it is, right, trying to figure that out is really part of it. And I think in addition, it's really looking at the bigger picture here. You know, we know, you know, through the Affordable Care Act and even a little bit before, there's been payment models in healthcare that have been more about outcomes, mm-hmm. right? You know, I mentioned fee for service before. That's, you know, you go to your doctor, you see
old,
them,
old school.
You get paid for, you know, that visit based on, you know, whatever diagnostic work it's done during mm-hmm. that visit, for instance. Outcomes-based payment, you know, is still, even though, you know, healthcare moves this slow, right? Even though 2008 or whenever, you know, it started to become more mainstream, it really hasn't been adopted yet. It's getting much bigger now. Yeah. But I think coupling this proactive sort of data-driven clinic design with the idea that we can align around outcomes, you know, we can help people be healthier. Yeah. We can align based on trying to drive the costs down in the healthcare system, is a big, you know, big plus as well.
And that's so a whole nother show.
It's one of those like dreamy win-win situations. If you get some of this right, you can actually align those pieces to say, folks are going to live better lives because they have more energy, their blood pressure's under control or whatever, right? And in addition, you could do it in a way that's less costly to the overall system,
right?
You know, because you can make interesting choices then too about what you're doing in these interactions, right?
Yeah.
We spend 45 minutes with the patient and the doctor when they first meet. Okay. I mean, that is forever.
Yeah,
it's like, almost like awkwardly too long.
It seems like a long, you know.
But it lets you get into the deep, like, why are you here? Like, what is the main motivator? You know, patients own a lot of their care. The doctors can help diagnose and, you know, recommend meds and lifestyle changes or whatever. But at the end of the day, patients really have to do
it. It's behavioral a lot of times, right?
And if you know those goals, then you can use that in your follow-up to say, maybe your grandkids. Now, you have grandkids now, and you don't have the energy to chase them across the room, and you like that, right? And so once you know that, then you can kind of use that in your follow-up, like, hey, how's it going with the grandkids?
Right.
And you can make the connection. And I think there's a little bit more accountability to that, too, to like, you know, you form this connection now. It's not someone that you've spent 5 minutes with once a year, right? It's a little bit longer.
It's team David.
It's team, team Marley, right? And I think it's really, I think those things are interesting to see how well that can do for patients in terms of that engagement. You know, being able to just send a text to the care team when you have a concern versus, you know, make an appointment, you know, the whole rigmarole and then, you know, maybe you get busy at work and you can't go and suddenly 6 months go by, whereas it's a much, I think, lower bar to engage with your team this way.
This makes entirely too much sense. This has got to be a huge success. You mentioned, you know, not just patients in Madison, and given the sort of the design of your service, it appears to be hybrid, right? So like, where is your service area? What's your farthest away patient? Where do they live?
We really launched just in the Midwest, not because it matters over Zoom if someone's in, you know, New Mexico or Minnesota or whatever else, but more because of the interesting side of healthcare. You know, each state has their own laws.
Sure.
You know, and so it's a challenge alone to think about licensing and rules and everything else in various states. And then each insurance company, even a national insurance company, they're going to have each state has their own group. And you have to, you know, if you want to work with a really big health or payer, you know, health insurance company, you have to apply not nationally and then sort of decide which states you want to work with. You have to go to Minnesota or Michigan and so we found the Midwest to be very kind of homogeneous in the structure and the rules and licensing, as well as with the payer side. And you know, and there are relatively few payers cover a lot of the state.
Sure.
Right. And so we're live in Minnesota, Wisconsin, Michigan, Ohio, Illinois, and Missouri currently.
Okay.
So really kind of banded into the Midwest. Over time, we like this idea of pods. So we also, our clinicians are all from the Midwest. Mm-hmm. It's sort of, you know, it kind of matches. And I think if we were to launch in Texas, for instance, you know, or in the South or in the West, right? I think we would look to spin up similar models where the clinic is from there and more likely to to feel like a local doctor than, you know, someone with a Midwestern accent in Texas, like might be fine. I don't know. Right. You know,
but the East Coast is very different than the Midwest.
I think there's some little bit of that going on there as well. But that's really kind of where we started, was to contain the geography to help prove the model. We don't need to be in all 50 states today. You know, we have just over 500 patients.
Okay.
We grow at about 20 a week. And that's for us, like, this is a good geography for us to work in and help prove that, is this idea, does this carry any weight? Does this work?
Yeah, let's reduce the moving parts if we can.
For sure.
You know,
operations person.
At least out of the gate.
Having to keep track of 50 states would be a lot harder.
Well, like you said, they each, you know, the you know, certifications are different and players are different,
right?
You know, regionally. That makes sense. So, you know, when did you know that this business model, because it's truly a departure from sort of what is going on typically, right? When did you know this model was going to be a success? Or wait, I'll better ask it. Do you know that this model will be a success?
It's pretty early. Very early on. And so, you know, like I said, we just have 500 patients, you know, which is, we're happy. You know, we've been open for a year. And I think to get to that level, we're really quite pleased. We are really marketing this directly to patients today. So that's the other reason to contain the geography, is that we advertise for our services in those six states, and are then able to match them with their insurance company, hopefully right away or something, you know, in that range. And so, you know, the fact that we go to consumers first means, and if they're saying yes, and they, from the beginning, they had to pay. So we've never made this a free service because I think you get really weird signals with free stuff and it's hard to understand what's really there.
Yeah.
It wasn't a lot. It was $20 a month. We thought this is close to what we think people are going to pay if they have a copay.
Sure.
And, you know, it's hard to estimate that stuff with all
what's
the
out of pocket
insurance and copays and coinsurance. But anyway, just having people willing to pay something for the service means we're offering something that people want and they're willing to pay for.
Yeah.
Right. And so that's probably the earliest success metric that we've had. The next one is, you know, we've collected health outcomes now and that's all looking good. Again, we're just implementing stuff that's already been proven. So it's not a huge surprise, but I think the fact that right away we can show reduction in blood pressure, right? We expanded into weight earlier this summer. We're starting to see weight loss data come through, you know, so these are good signs.
Okay.
Does it mean success in the end? You know, it's not a guarantee. There's a lot of work ahead of us that we have to still do, but I think these early signals are really strong.
Yeah.
And I think really encouraging.
Yeah. No, you're betting. It sounds like you're betting on the right things, right? And technology is helping. You know, is with you lockstep.
Exactly.
As wearables, you know, monitors, stuff like that. You know, is different than it ever was.
Right.
Which is great. So you said, you know, you've been open for a year. You've existed for what, 3 years? As a concept, as a company, right?
Right. The start of our, I think August was when the three of us co-founders at the beginning of August sat and looked at each other. We were all on Zoom actually. And we're like, okay,
are we doing this?
I guess we're doing this. Yeah. You know, so that was 2 years ago. We opened the clinic, like I said, a year ago. And so, yeah, we're just starting on our third year.
Okay. All right. And all of it's been COVID/post-COVID.
Yeah.
Which is probably helped in some ways, you know, oddly enough, because of the acceptance of being remote and you know, that sort of changed that whole paradigm.
Yeah. Yeah.
What has been the highest moment so far for the group, all right, where you sat back and you're like, oh, this, we got the contract, or we, you know, and what has been the OS moment, blank, you know?
Yeah, I think that the high points, you know, it's really easy to feel good working in healthcare if you're able to deliver something that helps people, right? Mm-hmm. And I think you said it earlier, you know, this it seems too easy or whatever, you know what I mean? This seems too obvious, right? Almost, or like this has to work, right? And I think for some people, this is like an amazing experience because they've, for whatever reason, they've just not had a good experience with a doctor or just hasn't worked out for them. And suddenly this does work. And then you get the like gushing feedback from, you know, and we have a user feedback channel that we, you know, post what comments people are saying and things like that, just for shared awareness across the org and a bit of encouragement. So just reading those, you know, every day is really gratifying to see that, like, we've helped a lot of people already, and that feels really good. So I think those kinds of moments are great. I think the virtual company can be tough. You know, I mean, it's harder to develop culture and everything when you're all sitting in your Zooms or in your rooms and you know, and feeling, you know, it's one thing, the meetings all work, but it's sort of, you feel funny saying, hey, can we Zoom just to talk about our kids? You know, like, no one really wants to do that. You know, it's, you know, and obviously if you're chit-chatting as you're grabbing water or whatever at work, that's one thing, but you know, it doesn't happen. And so I think those have been tougher moments than we thought at times, but at the same time, we've really tried hard to get everybody together on a cadence. So next week, actually, a bunch of folks are coming to Madison. We were in Minneapolis last month. You know, we've done meetups in Denver as well. We have folks kind of clustered around Madison. We have most of our clinical staff is here, as well as an engineer. And then we have Denver, which is more of our tech team. And then San Francisco tends to be a lot more of our marketing. And, and the other two co-founders are there. And Southern California, a few sales folks. So we have these clusters. And then try to find cities that are easy to fly to. And so the high points are really seeing each other in person. Honestly, just going to get dinner with someone that you've been working with for 6 months and never met in
Isn't
person.
Isn't that weird?
Feels great.
Like 3 years ago, we wouldn't have been, you know, that would have been foreign concept.
Right.
Like, what do you mean you've been working together for years and you've never met?
Yeah.
Right. Like that wouldn't have ever happened.
And then you discover some shared connection. You know, you both really like pinball or I don't know, whatever. Right. And it's really, it sounds kind of basic, but it is just a, ends up being a really high point. You're like, I understand. I've known this person for a long time and I understand them a little bit better. And so that, I think those, it's funny that it's the same high and low in the, but I think those things together are really important for us. And I think I hope that as we get bigger, we can figure out ways to still make that happen.
Right.
You know, you wonder if you have 200 people, like, how do you manage to get together? And we already know that when we have these meetups, not everybody can come every time, but then we hope we can catch, you know, different people. And that's why we try to move it around. So it might be more logistically simple.
Try to get them into Chicago versus, you know, versus a, you know, like you said, make sure that it's a fly to destination so that you don't have to take planes, trains, and automobiles to get there.
Yeah, direct flights are usually the one of the key goals for our get-togethers.
So how big a team are you? How many?
17.
17 people. Okay. Yeah. All right. So we're talking with David Hubanks, co-founder and COO of Marley Medical, a Madison-based Wisconsin company that offers a modern approach to healthcare. So how would a patient engage, you know, with you typically? So let's say I go to my primary care physician and he says, oh, you've got high blood pressure. So what happens to me from a workflow standpoint? How do I get to you guys?
Yeah, I mean, today we don't have referrals from a primary care physician.
Okay.
So more likely you would have gotten that diagnosis at some point. And it, let's say, for whatever reason, it wasn't working for you, or you had more questions than you were feeling like you got answers to. So today, a lot of our patients come to us via, they're either searching on Google for, you know, something related to high blood pressure, hypertension, or on Facebook, similar kind of thing, where their interests sort of line up, you know, with a clinic like ours. And so we just advertise. So it's a direct to consumer is really how we're finding people, or they're finding us. And then they would start going through our flow. We have, you know, we have leads meet with, we have really a sales team actually who just helps people understand what is this, all, you know, is this right for me? They also help to screen out, not everybody's right for virtual care. Some people need to be seen in person. But so helping to understand if there's extra complications beyond their high blood pressure that might make it really difficult for us to take good care of them. But also answering just general questions about what we do and how we do it and things like that. Those folks that are then interested to continue then meet and have a clinical visit where we get med histories and all that kind of stuff lined up. And then they have that 45-minute visit with the physician or prescriber to be able to understand, you know, their goals in a deeper sense and maybe like what's not working today, what is working today, and starting to come up with a plan for what's needed to be able to treat them and to help to bring their blood pressure down, for instance, or weight if it's an obesity patient, things of that nature.
Okay. So it's different than most clinics in that way as well, where right. usually you're referred to somebody, oh,
right.
you got to go talk to David, you got to go, to, you know, you got to go over here,
right.
Which can be frustrating as a, you know, as a patient, like, okay, now you're sending me somewhere else. They actually find you
right.
in today in most cases.
We do hope that over time we're able to have a mix of channels. Mm-hmm. Advertising direct to consumer is expensive sure. And it's hard to do. And so I think, you know, I think we'll always, you know, have that as one way that people find us. Mm-hmm. But I think in addition, we hope to get referrals over Got time. It. You know, being a new company, you know, I think it just takes a while to establish reputation sure. and things like that to make the introductions to the various PCPs to be able to get on their radar, to yeah. refer to us and things like that. You know, so we look to do more of the, you know, business to business type of mm. partnerships as well. You know, we've been through some startups now, and I think when you go through these way or these cycles of starting a company and working, I think the more you do it, the more kind of control obsessed you can end up being.
Yeah.
And waiting for a partner to give you a list of patients, or maybe they're going to call patients on your behalf as a first way to yeah. enter the market, it can be really tough and really frustrating. Cause like, nothing you can do. Yeah, sometimes.
you're at the mercy of right. somebody else making you a priority.
Right. So starting with direct to consumer, you know, is nice because we can control it. Yeah. Right. And so and it's nice too because, you know, most of these tools are set up well, so you can dial back your spending a little bit if your clinic's running hot, or mm-hmm. you know, if you've got capacity, you can increase yeah. your spend, and it really does work to drive the right number of patients in. And I think we've been really obsessed about having steady growth. We would not want to have 100 new patients
yeah,
at our
yeah.
door in a week. It'll be hard for us to provide any yeah. good service. We can do really great with 20, mm-hmm. you know what I mean? And so that's really what we've targeted today.
Okay.
You know, and I think that's been also a good way for us to build in line with our clinic staff, right? You hate to build a whole tech solution and then bring it to the clinicians and they're like, well, what is this?
Right.
Right. But I think when you can build it together and grow together, you can really see the opportunities to improve, you know, their workflows, yeah. the data flows.
You can build the team the right way.
And you can build the team the right way.
Because, you know, obviously a doctor, a clinician that is going to be with you guys and going to work with and for you guys has to look at the healthcare system a certain way, right?
Right.
They have to be disruptive in how they are coming to the table, or else they'd be somewhere else, and they wouldn't, you know, they wouldn't be a good fit for you. If they think everything's working fine now, then what's the need for Marley Medical, and why would I work here?
Right. Yeah. There's definitely some of that. I think a lot of I have a lot of friends that are doctors, and I think what you hear more often is, I think doctors just want to be able to like practice good medicine and feel like what they're doing has
right.
is benefiting, you know, folks. And I think even if you think that the system is okay today, I think there's still going to be the frustrations that like the time not spent with patients, or even the time that you have with patients, isn't the quality time right. that you're looking for too. So I hope, because, you know, we have to hire a lot of clinicians over
sure.
the time. And I think we can show the model kind of marries both sides. Like, this isn't like throw everything out, you know, and practice medicine, but just we have all these existing tools and research and meds and things like that. But just the implementation and yeah. the execution of it has not maybe changed in the way that it should. Mm. And this is just kind of helping to jump forward to that new incarnation of, you know, taking the good old, you know,
right.
all the things that we've learned over the years and right. applying them into tools and systems that just make it more effective for care and hopefully more satisfying yeah. for providing the care too.
No, like you said, the technology has been around for some time, but there was a resistance to
sure.
have sort of distant learning and, you know, sort of, you know, e-visits, right?
Right.
And so hopefully that you guys are maybe the tip of the spear or one of them, you know, that's helping to change that.
We hope so,
you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
So there's no shortage of healthcare-related startups for sure in the sure. in the Madison area. You know, some have gone on to do quite well. You know, Propeller Health is an example of one that's done well. Some haven't. You know, some are gone. What advice would you give to would-be founders of a new healthcare-related startup? If you had some folks that are coming up now and they said, "Oh, we want to do this thing," what would you tell them?
I think co-founder, like having the right co-founders, you really can't overstate the importance of that. You know, they should complement you well, right? If you're all the same person, mm-hmm. you know, I think that's going to be tough. I think having people you can depend on, I mean, there's going to be moments that are really, really hard. Mm-hmm. There's going to be situations where there's no right answer and it's hard to understand what to do. And I think, you know, having folks at your side that, you know, you can lean on and also will challenge you and will, you know what I mean? And kind of have good debates and good discussions. I think it's really important to have that at its core, right? Because I think you're going to go through a lot together. Yeah.
Not just the yes group.
Yeah, not exactly, right? I think that can lead to a lot of just unfortunate outcomes, right? Because you just didn't really steer into a hard topic or, you know, challenge an assumption that right. like people in their gut felt was wrong, right?
That I think, could come back on you.
Yeah, right. Whatever the Kennedy and Bay of Pigs, I think is like the famous, you know, groupthink story, right? You know, so I think that it really, it's, I think basic, I think other people have said it before, I would just reiterate it, that it's really important to do it, you know, find people that will compliment you well to yeah. go through this, you know, this journey together.
Yeah.
I think the other side is, you know, the technology and the idea, you know, I think a lot of people go into healthcare, like from the outside, you're like, wow, is this terrible? You know what I mean?
Who would do this?
Right. You know, and obviously it's just been a lot of, you know, incremental adding or, you know, and point solutions and things like that that have come across through the years. And I think the ideas have all been good, but I think that, you know, you have to step out of just the technology and the solution to think about how can this fit, right? How many things fundamentally have to change for your idea to work, right? And it's, you know, healthcare moves slow, as everyone says, right? And there's a combination of just history and legacy, patient, you know, risk aversion. There's, you know, payers and you know, healthcare payment rules or state law. These things are there. And so I think if you don't have a clear path, you know, to see how you're going to go to market and how you're actually going to get paid for this, and does it involve, you know, like 25 states changing legislation to allow your product to come through or something else like that? You know, I think a lot of folks get really excited about the technology and kind of don't do the work around go to market.
Yeah, they blow past the barriers to entry and all the things. So this has been a conversation with David Hubanks, co-founder and COO of Marley Medical. With our last few seconds, what should we be looking for from you guys in the coming months?
Yeah, I mean, for us to become a full cardiometabolic clinic, we really need to get into diabetes next and taking care of cholesterol. So we really started with high blood pressure, as we wanted to focus on one chronic disease first to understand, start to build the technology platform around that. We extended it into weight and obesity management this summer. And now we'll start going into diabetes and cholesterol in the fall too. And then I think hopefully by the end of the year, we'll feel like we've established the beginnings.
There's your foothold.
Of a really great cardiometabolic clinic.
That's great. Well, thank you for joining us.
My pleasure.
Come back again and give us an update.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thanks for joining us for this episode of Starting Blocks Innovate 608. You can hear more episodes about Wisconsin's entrepreneurial ecosystem on the Starting Block website at startingblockmadison.org or on your favorite podcast platform.